I would be disappointed, obviously, if he's gone. But a club like Celtic is a very, very big club.
Good performance by the boys in green in Craven Cottage. Roy stays on, and it's Costa Rica up next for Ireland. This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. You can tweet us at FRQFM and visit Freak FM on Facebook. We'll have a surgical autopsy on the Italy game, look at the key players involved, discuss Roy Keane, and look ahead to the big games against Costa Rica and Portugal. We'll also discuss the major talking points on the Irish fans' soccer site, whybig.ie. I'm delighted to be joined by Extra Time reporter Pete Kelly, Ger McCarthy of the Irish Examiner, and Joe McCarthy of the Irish Abroad website. Lads, you're all very welcome to the show. Ger, I'm going to come to yourself first, because of the major talking point is, of course, your fellow Cork man, Roy Keane, making all the stories. He's told Celtic that he is no longer available to be their manager, or he asked not to be considered to be their manager. Great news for Ireland, maybe bad news for Celtic, but it's something that a lot of Irish fans are pretty divided on once again, anytime it's Roy Keane, but major talking points there.
Yes, I think the most of the headlines in this morning's newspapers centred on Roy's move to Parkhead, which seemed to accelerate over the weekend following an initial conversation with Dermot Desmond, until this afternoon when Liam Mackey in his Irish Examiner article actually made a point of mentioning that there was still the possibility of a dramatic late twist, with a Premier League club having approached Keane with the offer of an assistant manager role in conjunction with the Irish role. So this story now is starting to gain a bit of steam. The sports editor of the Examiner, Tony Lean, has blogged this evening saying, backing up the story and giving a couple of interesting reasons as to why Roy Keane may have, you know, reconsidered the option of going forward for the managerial position. The most interesting one, I think, is that there was going to be nothing more than 5 million in terms of a transfer kitty, which is pretty paltry when you consider the Champions League opponent Celtic would be up against. So I think that the fact that Fraser Forster, their goalkeeper, excellent season for Celtic, looks like he's on his way to the Premier League, was on the way out the door. And I think just the fact that Roy is actually appearing and is settling into the role under Martin O'Neill, I think a lot of people quickly forgot that as soon as Celtic name was mentioned. A lot of people just made the assumption that he'd leave, but he does seem to be settled in the role. He seems to have mellowed out, something Aidan McGeady mentioned in a few newspapers today. A lot of the players and a lot of the things that Roy was infamous for at his previous club, Sunderland and Ipswich, being, you know, a pretty strict taskmaster, he seems to have mellowed. He seems to enjoy the role with Martin O'Neill more than anything, and I think the opportunity to work and build up a few bridges with the FAI. Let's not forget, down the line, Roy probably has ambitions to be manager of Ireland one day. So all in all, an opportunity to join Celtic was obviously a tempting one. I think the fact that he has a relationship and a pretty good one with Dermot Desmond was also favourable to him. But I'm delighted, and I think the majority of Irish supporters are delighted, not the fact that it's Roy Keane is staying on, but the fact that the Republic of Ireland have held on to an assistant manager who's enjoying the role, growing into the role and contributing to Martin O'Neill and to the squad. And I think, you know, I think the performance against Italy at Craven Cottage as well on Saturday night is testament to that. So I'm happy he's staying, and it's not nothing to do with the fact that he's a Cork man. But I think he's going to bring a lot more to the Irish role, and I think he's acknowledged that.
Ger, I'm delighted myself. I think a lot of people were. I was listening to Keith Andrews and Kevin Kilbane on Setanta, and indeed Brian Kerr the other night for the Italy game, and they said it's not just the pulling power of having Roy Keane as an assistant manager, but for the players itself, when they have a guy who's going to give you one-to-one kind of advice and tips and that kind of thing, it's huge. And of course, they're better off with him in than without him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the nail on the head, really, Dave. But I do think it is worth noting that the story that is kind of circulating this evening about a Premier League club, apparently with a lot of Irish affiliations, a lot of Irish connections, is floating in the background, that we wouldn't just kind of put the full stop on this story just yet. The Celtic element of the story is certainly gone, but and even though he's on the plane to the United States with the squad this evening and tomorrow, I think there will be a second half of the story before the week is out, so it would be worth just keeping tabs on it. But for now, having somebody with his experience, and as you mentioned, with his just with his relationship with the players and the way that they seem to be responding positively to him, and let's not forget, he's an assistant manager, he's not the Irish manager, even even though people sometimes when you're reading the headlines, it would have you believe that he is the manager. I think all around it's good for Ireland, and I think it's good for Keane because he needs to bounce back from his two previous failures, and they were failures at Sunderland and Ipswich. And I think he understands now that by, the longer he spends working with Martin O'Neill, the better for him, and hopefully the better for the Republic of Ireland.
Do you think, Ger, that a lot of Irish fans were maybe giving him a bit of a raw deal? I know another Cork man came out, Tony O'Donoghue, saying that if it was Marco Tardelli who had been snapped up by Inter Milan or somebody like that at the time when he was number two to Giovanni Trapattoni, we would have all said, ah, well done, fair play to you, Marco, that's great. Mm. But because it's Roy Keane and because there's a little bit of history there, and I know the Sun newspaper had on their back page Saipan 2, they were going completely overboard, surely. And this is just my opinion, but I think a lot of people were kind of jumping the gun. Would you be along the lines of Tony O'Donoghue's view there?
I think I would. Look, Roy Keane polarises opinion. He polarises Irish soccer fans' opinions more than anyone, but all over the world, he's headline news over what happened in Saipan. But it's a fair point. I think the fact that his background story and falling out with the FAI and the fact that he's come back into the fold now, I think is probably the underlying story in all of this, and that people are just amazed at the transformation and the fact that he's basically, you know, he's basically been accepted by John Delaney. They've burnt their bridges and they just seem to be working well. Right now, the Republic of Ireland need Martin O'Neill and they need the squad to gel over these four matches. They're very, very important. The upside is that the performances are improving, which is a good thing. And I think somebody of Keane's experience at international and club level, and also the fact, I think it's actually a good thing that he's made so many mistakes in his two previous roles because he seems to have learned from them. Hopefully he can bring that to the training pitch. He obviously seems to be doing something right. Again, I wouldn't give him all the credit for the upsurge in Ireland's performances, but he's certainly a major part of it. So like, if you're asking me straight out, where do I stand on, and whose side do I stand on, I'm glad he's still with the Republic of Ireland, but please, with the caveat, Dave, that by the end of next week there may be another managerial or assistant managerial position come into the reckoning, but hopefully it'll involve him continuing his role in the background with the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, certainly. I think everybody will agree with you there. Pete Kelly, to get a Galway view on this side of things, what was your initial opinion? There was a strong outcry of people saying he's walking out on his country again, which frankly I think is a little bit, but that opinion is out there, Pete.
You're always going to get extreme opinions, and you'll also, you know, from time to time, you'll get some in the media, like the Sun, putting something daft like, you know, Saigon 2 on the page, because they really don't give a toss about it. You know, the guys who write this stuff about Irish soccer, they just want to, you know, create a bit of controversy and get something that, you know, that headline will keep being repeated around. Like we're talking about it now, for instance. So from that point of view, from their point of perspective, it's successful. I think with Keane, you know, I would agree with a huge amount of what Ger said there, that, you know, what Ireland need is continuity now that we've sort of built up some kind of momentum. And this is why O'Neill and Keane wanted these four friendlies crammed together at the end of the season, whether the players were tired or not, because it's all about creating a squad and also creating, you know, that sort of camaraderie, which is very important. It was a thing that Jack Charlton had years ago. The brand of football wasn't very good, but it helped float Irish soccer financially from what they achieved. But those guys would all die for each other on the pitch. And so there has to be a bit of that. Any team that Martin O'Neill has managed had that attribute in spades. And all people have to do is look back on Roy's playing career to see that, you know, he personified that. You know, he gave nothing less than 100% every single time. I also think that Celtic could have been a death knell for him. You know, Celtic are in a desperate situation this year. The top four most attractive teams in terms of attendances in Scotland, three of them are now not in the Premier Division. You know, it's like Celtic are Rangers, Hearts and Hibs. So Celtic are there alone, and, you know, they can win that league easy without having to invest any money. Now, obviously, for the Champions League, they would have to invest quite a significant amount of money. But I think Dermot Desmond and the guys are weighing it up and say, that's, you know, for a few matches where they mightn't qualify anyway, it might be a poor investment.
Yeah, Pete, Ger made a point about Roy Keane so far in his role for Ireland and how he seems to be really kind of growing into the role. And you said yourself how the team need to gel now and we seem to be finally making steady progress. One of the things that we have seen from Roy Keane that has been differed to other assistant managers that we have is there's a huge honesty there when at training, because Martin O'Neill will send him down to talk to the media and things like that. And I think at the last training session before the Turkey game, he was asked a question, how was training today? Were you impressed with it? It was okay, he said. Just okay? Yeah, it was okay. You know what I mean? And having something like that, an honesty there, it's something new to what we've come to expect from like assistant managers for Ireland.
Yeah, well, you know, he's, you know, whether you agree or disagree with him, he's always told it like he saw it. And so if he's saying, you know, when a professional sports teams are training at any given time, there's going to be flat days and there's going to be days when there's a great buzz around the training ground. So I don't think that, you know, that there's, you know, that that's out of the ordinary at all. I think his encouragement to the players, and, you know, he will be straight up and honest with them, is a big help. You know, I think, you know, he said in an interview not so long back that one of the things he was learning with his time working with Martin O'Neill is where his boundaries were and how to deal with those. And I think, and he said it in a sort of a jocular fashion, which is good for Keane. I think he's growing up a bit, you know, and maybe he realises that he threw himself into the managerial hot seats at, you know, at Sunderland Ipswich far too soon, that he should have sat back and listened a bit. And learned a bit, like when Martin O'Neill started, I think he started with Wickham or somebody like that, and it was down in, you know, in the lower divisions, and he actually, you know, he was actually offered jobs early on in his career and he turned them down because he said, I have a lot more to learn, yeah. You know, so I think Keane might learn from that. I'm sure they've sat down and spoke to each other, and I think that'll stand him in good stead. Whether he's offered an assistant manager's job in England, who knows? I see Aston Villa cropping up on the Twitter machine here, so I don't know. I don't know why he would do it. He is, you know, but that's the way it is. We're going to hear a lot about it anyway, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. Some people are making the point as well that if he was to take another job, it might have been good for him to go now rather than, say, halfway through a competitive campaign. But other people will believe that once the competitive campaign starts, he'll be sticking around. Joe McCarthy, we've gotten the Cork view, we've gotten the Galway view. Now yourself, we'll take a Limerick view from you on this. What did you make of the whole circus surrounding it? Martin O'Neill will be maybe a little bit happy that it's taken a little bit of pressure off him, but he's been the one having to answer the questions at the same time. And, you know, at times he hasn't been able to give the media the actual answers because in reality, he didn't really know.
Yeah, I think that's been very much the case for the last few days. And it's unfortunate as well because this is what's been dominating the press ever since his name was first linked with the job. And, you know, coming so soon, coming around the Italy game and, you know, the Italy result, it's still what's filling the headlines, which, you know, takes a little away from an excellent performance from the Irish team. And I think that that cloud is probably still going to be there with the two games in the States next week. Having said that, I heard when his name was first linked with the job, I didn't think he was a good fit for the Celtic position. All I could think was, you know, 6 months ago, you know, he was just a commentator with ITV, and it mightn't have been, you know, it's the Celtic job is a big prospect. I mean, I was checking out the fixtures, and their first fixture of the season is the second qualifying round for the Champions League, which comes 3 days after the World Cup final, which is only, I think, 7 weeks away from now. So, you know, if whatever manager they do appoint, you know, he's going to have to assess the squad, assess transfer targets, and then prepare for a game in, you know, in less than 2 months. And you'd wonder, like, it's a big ask of any manager, you know, let alone someone who's been out of club management for as long as Roy Keane has. I think the storm that surrounded it, I think, still shows the draw and the impact of Roy Keane has on the Irish sporting scene. I mean, I don't ever recall Tardelli taking a press conference when Trapattoni was manager, I think, except when he was in hospital. And, you know, it seems now that Roy Keane is either taking the press conference or is dominating the topic of the press conference for the last few times that Martin O'Neill has met the media. And unfortunately, I know, just because everyone wants to know why either he didn't take the Celtic job or Celtic didn't offer him the job. It's probably what's going to happen, you know, when they set up for the first press conference against Costa Rica in Philadelphia next week. The other thing that I think I'm slowly coming to realize is that whenever any Premier League or Championship or even Scottish club sacks their manager or the manager moves on, he'll probably be one of the first names linked with the job. And again, as soon as an international...
So this circus is going to continue, Joe, is that what you're saying? Every time there's a manager gone from a Premier League club?
I think so. And you know, unfortunately, Martin O'Neill will be facing the press probably about once a month, depending on the international calendar. And, you know, the first thing he's going to be asked is, well, what do you think about the link between Roy Keane and Norwich or Middlesbrough or Hibs or whoever? Instead of, you know, how do you think we're set for the qualifier coming in the next week?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Just before I leave this, I want to leave it on a light-hearted note. Jer, from a media point of view, it's very exciting having Roy as assistant manager and answering questions. Don't get me wrong, if you ask him the wrong question, you're certainly going to know about it. One of the journalists there at the training said to him, they were talking about Van Gaal and the Man United job, and someone fired at him, "Is it a big job, Roy?" And Roy returns, "Is that just the stupidest question I've ever heard in my life? Of course it's a big job." What possesses people to ask questions? Because I know myself, if he was there, you'd think of something interesting to ask him rather than something that's just stating the obvious. Or maybe they're just so kind of overcome that the fact that he's there and he has the evil eyes and that they can't think properly. What do you think it is, Jer?
I know from speaking to some lads who've been in press conferences with Roy that generally you can gauge his mood from how he walks into the dress or walks into the press conference. I think it's a general word I would use is fear. I think there's the guy has such an aura about him, whether you like him or loathe him. There's such a backstory to his history at both the club and international level, and don't forget he was a world-class midfielder as well, one of the few that we've produced in the last 10-15 years, that he maintains that aura of unpredictability about him, in that the fire is still in the eyes, and that's a pretty tame question to some of the ones that I've heard asked of him before. And especially I remember one at Ipswich when somebody made the mistake of letting their mobile phone on, which was a, you know, almost a death sentence. But I think with Roy, depending on the mood, he's behind the scenes, by all accounts, he is a very jovial character. He's a very relaxed character, but he's demanding. But again, I go back to my first point. He seems to, I won't say he's mellowed, but I think he's coming around to the fact now, as a manager, or even as an assistant manager, that he needs to just tone it down a bit. He needs to relax a bit more, because by doing that, people who are in awe of him, including some people in the press corps, even though they won't admit it, will be more relaxed. And it just makes for a more relaxing and more sedate press conference. And just one final point on it, the point that Joe was making there about, you know, Roy taking a lot of the press conferences and that you wouldn't normally see it, that wouldn't normally be the case. I think Martin O'Neill knew all this before he decided to select Roy Keane as assistant manager. I think Martin O'Neill is a very smart guy, because even though there's a very, very important four set of friendly fixtures, there's a media frenzy surrounding the assistant manager. Martin O'Neill is free to get on with the job, and he has been pretty much free to get on with the job. Even losing, you know, to the Turks and playing very, very well against Italy, most of the headlines were about Roy Keane. So Ireland are chugging along just nicely under Martin O'Neill, and will continue to do so. And as long as Roy Keane stays there and it doesn't affect the preparations, I think Martin O'Neill will welcome the media circus, because it takes the focus off his players and it takes the focus off him.
Yep, a tactical decision maybe from Martin O'Neill, Jer. Pete Kelly, to come to you, and I want to talk about the Ireland-Italy match, because after all, it was a very good performance by the Irish team. The main problem and the main concern I might have with it is the lack of cutting edge in terms of putting the ball in the net. There was one stage McGeady put it on Shane Long's head, perfect, and Shane Long headed it back towards where the keeper was coming from. He could have just kind of knocked it in the other side. It would have been a perfect goal. Stephen Quinn hit the post. Pilkington had a shot saved. He also had a shot blocked. McLean did very well. Myler with a shot saved. We played some very, very good stuff. Of course, it was very good from Italy early on, but I thought when the Irish team got into the game, it was particularly interesting seeing that midfield pairing of Jeff Hendrick and David Myler.
Yeah, I think you see what you have is you've almost like with Hendrick and Myler, you've got the next generation of guys type of thing, you know, and it's worth you playing, you know, if you want to start introducing players and find out something about them and see if they're going to be capable of playing at that level, then there's no point in putting them in against no hopers. But if they're playing against the Italians, and even if the Italians have one eye on the World Cup finals, they're still going to be formidable opposition because one, they won't get away so much. And two, you know, they'll be nippy in the tackle, and they're, you know, the Italian midfield players for many generations have been very, very tough. So I think that's good to see guys coming in, not being overawed. I'd say they'd get that sense as well from the likes of Keane, you know, who would say just go in there and play, and let's win and see what you can do, and not freeze, get in there, hit hard, and play the ball and pass it around. Because even though Keane had a fearsome reputation for being a real genuine hard man, he could also play, and you know, and sometimes that gets overlooked. He was an outstanding midfield player with great vision, a good pass for the ball. So, you know, I think it's good to see that kind of happen, and it's good to see them having the confidence to go and do it, and it'd be, you know, and see if that could be carried on into the game against Costa Rica and Philadelphia, where it's likely to be very hot and probably humid.
Ger, to come to you on this, were you impressed with the Irish performance in Craven Cottage? I thought a lot of the players really stepped up to it. You know, we've seen Pilkington, glimpses of what he really can do. He looked a bit tired at the end, and that's probably why they took him off. But we've seen a couple of good glimpses there, but he got skipped by players with ease and has that real attacking threat. Another good performance by Aidan McGeady. And Wes Houlihan, as always, has been very solid under Martin O'Neill. What did you think? No doubt very happy.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed with the performance, I suppose. That's the first thing to say. I was impressed with about 80 minutes. I thought it was a much more complete game performance from the Irish team. Definitely an upgrade on how they played against the Turks at the Aviva prior to that. So I suppose in that sense, I think the work on the training pitch that they've been doing in between the games seems to be bearing fruit, and that's encouraging. I would be worried about Martin O'Neill's strike force if Ireland weren't creating the chances. But the good news is, I think, if you're looking at it over the two games that we've seen so far, the two friendlies, Ireland are creating a plethora of chances. I think you're right to allude there to the fact that we haven't got anybody to put the ball in the net just yet. But I think we also have to just take a step back. These are friendlies. The Italians, for me, even though they were pretty strong on paper and played particularly well, I think they were a little upset by the unfortunate injury to Riccardo Montolivo. I think the fact that when he broke his leg with the clumsy challenge by Alex Pearce, I thought that just kind of upset them a little bit and upset their rhythm. But I don't think you can take away from Ireland's overall performance. You were right to allude to the wingers. It's good to see Aidan McGeady continue another consistent performance, but he needs to keep doing it. He needs to do it in the big games and the not so big games. But I think it's certainly helping him. He's speaking in glowing terms of Roy Keane, how he's been helping him, and Martin O'Neill, working under Martin O'Neill again for him. Certainly seems to be bringing the best out of him. But we need McGeady at his best in September, not now. So I'll reserve judgment on him until then, because too often in the past McGeady's put together a couple of decent games and then he goes missing. Pilkington, it's about time he played. It's about time he put in a decent shift, because there's been so many stop-start occasions when he's been called up and had to cry off injured. I'm waiting to see, can he deliver at the international stage? He did very well and he did himself no harm. But the big story, I think, coming out of the friendly and the big headline that I would have taken from it is the fact that David Myler and Jeff Hendrick slotted into that central midfield role and played so well, played composed, smart football. And if those two guys can continue to perform week in, week out for Derby and for Hull City, if they can keep their level of consistency up, that will only give Martin O'Neill a headache when it comes to September. And that's the key time, September, when he comes to select his central midfield. And look, if you can play well against Italy, if you can create a lot of chances, it would have been nice to win it, but continue the consistent performances, you're on an upward curve, and that's all you can ask.
Pete, that's a very good point that Ger said about Hendrick and Myler, two of the major talking points on that. I did ask the question on Twitter after the game. I said, is there any possibility that Hendrick and Myler could be challenging the Whelan and McCarthy midfield? Because it was great to see both Hendrick and Myler getting up the pitch and actually launching attacks from a central area, Pete, and it's something we're not used to, and it's something we don't see when we have Whelan and McCarthy playing together.
Yeah, I don't think either of them are challenging McCarthy, but I'd say probably both of them are challenging Whelan. But he has seen off opposition in the past. He's rock solid, consistent. He's not a he's no world beater, he's no Lionel Messi. But why Trapattoni put him in there is he was ultra reliable, a tough man. He might get the odd goal here and there, but he would die for the cause as well. And so they were the attributes that they really saw them. But with Hendrick and Myler, they're hungry, and if they can get a run. I think realistically McCarthy is going to be one of the first names on the team sheet, and you perm three or four from that, and depending on how he wants to set the team up in the end. And I'm assuming that that Keane will also be another guy who will be on the team sheet straight away. So how do you perm the other guys in around them? And because all those names that you mentioned that have done well, and Houlihan is hanging in around there as well. So will Wes Houlihan get in when they pick the strongest side? And if he doesn't, there'll be some section in the media that'll go daft about that. But I think that, at least he's got options now. And he's got options of guys who are coming through, and they're hungry players. And I think that's important. But I think they did particularly well. And at least we've got serious competition, which is good.
We're also delighted to be joined by John O'Neill. John, thanks a million for coming on the show. Just before we leave this topic, I want to get your view on the match. Were you impressed with the Irish performance? One of the key overwhelming topics is the fact that we didn't seem to be able to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I thought it was a good performance overall. Certainly a lot better than what we saw against Turkey the previous week. I think, not scoring, not putting the ball away is a big problem. And we had against Turkey. We didn't play particularly well against Turkey, but we still had chances in that game. Which we didn't convert, and we saw that again on Saturday against Italy. That's going to be a problem when you come into the qualifiers of the European Championships in big games, especially. I heard Kevin Dodds during the week. He was talking about they put it to him about Robbie Keane, about how much of an influence he has and what they can do compared to him, and he pretty much said that they're not going to be able to match his scoring record, but they can introduce other aspects that maybe Robbie can't. But it wasn't really a confidence-inspiring statement from one of your strikers who's supposed to be scoring goals when they're just resigned to the fact that they're not going to be good as Robbie Keane for goals. They can do something else. Because when you're coming to the crucial qualifiers, a few minutes to go, we need to pick up points. Your strikers are the ones who are going to make the difference. And you can have all the player in the world, but if you haven't got someone to put the ball in the back of the net, it's going to cost you. And obviously, it doesn't matter too much for these games, but it will matter coming into the Euros. I think overall it was a much improved performance, but I wouldn't read too much into it. Italy obviously were conscious of the World Cup coming up. Unfortunately, one of their players, Montolivo, I think it was, got injured. But the rest of them were conscious not to get injured, and you could see a little bit holding back. But that's all I can do is play what was in front of them. But the midfield was good, and Wes Houlihan in particular linked up very well and was kind of the catalyst for a lot of the chances that were coming through. But if we don't, Shane Long, really, his goal return for Ireland hasn't been good enough. I know he does a lot of things, and he's a lot of energy and brings a lot of other things to the table, but ultimately we need someone who's going to be scoring goals, and hopefully other strikers get a chance. The likes of maybe Anthony Stokes, I know he's playing at a lower level to other players in the Scottish League, but he is scoring regularly. That's what you need. Strikers are all about confidence. He scores a lot of goals on a regular basis. So if we need someone like that, maybe over the couple of games in America, he might get a chance. But sooner or later, we have to start looking at strikers who can score, because it's a problem at the moment, and we kind of need to address it before the first qualifier in Georgia.
The first qualifier in Georgia will be where we will certainly have to score goals, particularly when we're up against it. We've got Costa Rica coming up next. I think it's a 1 a.m. kickoff our time. I think it's live on Setanta if anybody's looking to watch it. John, I'll keep with yourself about Costa Rica. It's going to be another tough game. They're a team that are going to the World Cup in probably one of the toughest groups for themselves. They've got England and Uruguay in there. England, Italy and Uruguay. So it'll be very interesting indeed. But having said that, do you expect Martin O'Neill to change it up now for this game? Obviously, we don't have Seamus Coleman or John O'Shea going, but the chance you might get to see more of Myler and Hendrick in midfield. Stephen Quinn could get a start. Pilkington and Houlihan, they'll probably be playing for new clubs.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see changes anyway. Obviously, Coleman and O'Shea can't make it. that's possibly a good thing because it'll force him to change. One thing on Saturday, the whole back four wasn't changed at all. He didn't take any of the defenders off or anything at halftime. So maybe he's looking for a bit of consistency there. But I think he will make some changes. He doesn't seem to be prone to making too many in friendlies, but it's given them scope. We do need, I don't think, look, Coleman and O'Shea are going to be guaranteed their places, I think, pretty much once qualifiers start. So there's a chance for maybe a centre-half any to stake their place, because we're not so overly blessed with that, apart from the likes of O'Shea and Dunn. So the midfield as well, James McCarthy, who won't be there, I believe. So he's going to be guaranteed his place as well, but it gives the likes of Mailer and Hendrick the opportunity to see what they can do again. I'd like to see Pilgrim play. I think he did well enough on Saturday, so hopefully he gets more game time. It's taken him long enough to show up for his game, so we might as well give him another go in the Costa Rica game. But yeah, looking forward to it, and hopefully we learn a few more things. And the players who've shown maybe just on Saturday in Turkey, there wasn't too many players that stood out, but hopefully the players that played well against Italy can do that again against Costa Rica, and then hopefully against Portugal as well, and maybe stake a claim to make O'Neill think a few bit two things coming into the qualifiers.
Yeah, indeed, we will. Hopefully there will be a few questions asked. Pete, what are you looking forward to seeing from O'Neill and from the Irish team? Is there any players in particular that you'd like to see get a full run out, see what they can do?
Well, I think any of the players, and names won't roll off my tongue off the top of my head at the moment. Any of the guys who have come in for these series of matches, you would like to think that over the two games in the States, the guys who've had little or no game time so far will be given a good run out. Because to play at that level, you need to play, half an hour here and there is no good. You need to see about guys. The game could pass them by, so you need guys to be out there and play for a game or two, and or portions of a couple of games. It gives you some idea. I think I would, I'd agree and echo what John was saying there, that, regardless of all these tryouts, and, it makes good, it makes sort of good media coverage to say, oh, we're trying this guy and we're trying that guy. The reality is there's probably, O'Neill probably has 7 or 8 of the places nailed down on the team so far. And he's just, he's looking to add maybe 4 starters, I would say. And some of the guys that John was talking about there, with O'Shea and Coleman. I think, if Richard Dunn is fit and in good shape, he has to play. And then you're looking for a left back, and it could be Wilson, it could be Ward. So, and McCarthy's a definite, and Robbie's gonna be playing up front. So then you're only looking about 3 or 4 other guys to add in. So they'll all be staking a claim, but it's to be fringe players for a lot of them, I'm afraid.
Okay, fringe players. I hope it's not the case, Pete, but you never know. We're also joined on the show by James Carew of Pogue McGoal. James, thanks for joining us. We're talking about the Costa Rica and Portugal games coming up and what you'd like to see from the team. There was a lot of positives looking back at the Italy game, the likes of Pilkington and Houlihan with another solid game, but these two games in the States will be against very different opposition. Who would you like to see get a more of a run out, and what do you think is going to happen? Do you think Martin O'Neill is going to really shuffle up the deck?
Yeah, hi Dave. I think everyone was kind of taken aback by and impressed with the performance against Italy. So is this O'Neill putting his stamp on it? What we will really see now over the next two games is if we see a similar kind of performance and level of input, then we can say, yes, he's getting his ideas across, and just hope that the Italian game was not a flash in the pan. As Pete was saying, if you're going to change up the personnel, there's a danger then that you don't get that same level of effort. But that's really where the manager comes into his own, with drilling systems and drilling little details, to use a trappism, into the players, no matter who he picks. So that's really what I'm looking for, is more of the same, Dave.
More of the same. Is there anyone in particular, though, James, that you would like to see? Stephen Quinn, of course. Yeah. I don't think he's had a bad game, and he's never gotten a full game, or maybe he started one or two friendlies, but I think he's been very solid. He's the Houlihan type player, and for moments against Turkey, we got to see both him and Houlihan play together and linking up well, and it was kind of exciting to see. Maybe he could get a full run out.
Yeah, I think you took the name off straight out of my head. I think the fact that O'Neill has plumped for Quinn in these games, as you said, in a Houlihan type role. I think we're already discussed before that Houlihan is O'Neill's type of player. I think Wes is going to be a big part of the games going forward. So if he sees Quinn in that mold, definitely let's try out Stephen Quinn. He's had he played in the FA Cup final in recent weeks. As you said, he's got a run out. He played in the US tour last summer and did really well when he was introduced. So, yeah, he's definitely one for... I'd like to see more of Pilkington again. I thought he was excellent the other day, but Quinn really is the one. When you don't have Andy Reid in to go with you and you don't have James McCarthy, he's kind of limited really in his creative sense in midfield. So that's certainly, which is really what we're looking for improvements all the time, Dave, is in the midfield compared to the previous manager. So let's see what he can come up with.
And just very quickly, James, because just earlier on, before you came on the show, the point was raised that maybe Glenn Whelan's position is in jeopardy considering the performances by Hendrick and Myler. Would you go along with that, or do you think it's going to be Whelan and McCarthy, they're set in stone?
No, I think Whelan's position absolutely is under threat. I think, as we've been discussing, the entire midfield position, the system he potentially might play, it's all up for grabs. Hendrick absolutely is another one who should get run outs over in America. So Glenn Whelan, 100% his position is under threat. Mailer did quite well the other night. So as we discussed last week, if O'Neill's philosophy is going to be about creative players treading passes like Houlihan, like Reid, like McCarthy, then Glenn Whelan's not that type of player. Neither is Mailer. So perhaps Mailer and Whelan and even Gibson, if he comes back in, are going for that, what we discussed last week, this kind of battler in the middle. But if O'Neill is going to go for creativity, then over the last 6 years, sadly, we haven't seen any of that from Whelan or any of his midfield partners, to be fair. So all positions are up for grabs.
Okay, that's good to hear. Joe McCarthy, to get your point on these two games coming up, we've got two difficult opposition. Costa Rica, we had Philip O'Connor actually on the programme there 2 weeks ago talking about the Costa Rican team and that they're not, they have a bit about them, you know. And Portugal, of course, it'll remains to be seen whether we'll have see Ronaldo, but nevertheless, they've got a strong team with a couple of Real Madrid players, defenders, and, you know, they can score goals. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It's going to be an interesting game. Do you think that by the time we get these two friendlies underway, justice will be served? Martin O'Neill will have stamped his authority on the team, and the players that are playing for not just to get in the Irish squad for the Euros, but also some of them looking to put themselves in the shop windows at their clubs, the likes of Houlihan and Pilkington, for example. Do you think that's going to happen? Are we going to be satisfied after these games? Or is it going to be a case like in the previous years under Trapattoni where we felt, oh, a wasted opportunity?
Well, the first thing, you know, whether or not Martin O'Neill has put his stamp on the team, this is probably the longest he's been able to work with the squad uninterrupted since he first took over the position, you know, towards the end of last year. So I definitely felt in the Turkey game, and obviously more so in the Italy game, that you could see there was little passages of play, the way the team was set up, the way they were trying to keep possession, they were pressing a little bit higher up the pitch that we haven't seen in a little while. I think that definitely is the impact and the influence of the new management. We're going over now to the States to play two teams who are, you know, in the final stages of their preparations for the World Cup in Brazil. I think the obvious criticism is that, and I think some people have voiced this opinion after the Italy game, is that players on the opposition aren't going to be, you know, maybe not going in full-blooded into tackles in case of Montalivo, that they get injured or they might pick up an unwarranted red card and, you know, find themselves out of the team when the World Cup kicks off. The obvious counter argument is that, you know, for someone who's on the fringes of the squad and might get a start, you know, it's a chance to impress you know, your manager, it's the time to, you know, it's a chance to put your throw your hat into the ring and say, look, I'm here, I'm in the squad, I'm good enough to start in the friendlies, I'm good enough to start in the World Cup. You know, we saw Rossi started up front for Italy at the weekend, and didn't. You know, I don't think he played particularly badly, but by the same token, he didn't do anything special. And when the squad was announced by Prandelli, he'd been omitted. You know, so I think that's obviously something that the opposition are going to have to be aware of. That you know, if you're given a chance to play against Ireland, then you know it could make or break whether or not you play in the World Cup. I think any player, you know, who deserves his place or deserves to play in the World Cup, you know, should take that chance with both hands. As for whether or not are we going to come away from these games thinking, you know, whether was that a missed opportunity to see player X or player Y given a chance, I don't think so. I think there's been a few players in the squad, yes, that we haven't seen in the first two games. I know Kieran Clark of Aston Villa springs to mind. I think he could be a possibility at left full. I know he was dropped from the Villa team for a little while this season, but towards the end of the year, at the end of the season, he was back in the team and playing well by all accounts. I think, as you say, Stephen Quinn starting maybe in place of Wes Hoolan is a definite possibility, and obviously, you know, Robbie Keane is going to be back in the team as well. So you know, we're going to see him. We're going to see what he can do in a Martin O'Neill team. Probably, well, not for the first time, but you know, on a team that's been properly organised and properly set up by Martin O'Neill. He scored like 3 or 4 goals in his last few games for LA Galaxy, so he's in form. He'll be playing in front of, you know, MLS fans and MLS stadiums. So I think, you know, it's a very exciting time for him. And you know, to show what the new management can do with this team. And obviously, as we say, like there's no friendlies in August anymore. So these two games are the last opportunities for players to put their hands up and say, you know, I'm worthy of a place in the squad. You know, I'm worthy of a place in the starting 11, you know, and, you know, when the first qualifier against Georgia rolls around in September, I want to be part of the setup. So I'm looking forward to seeing these two games now next week.
Yeah, exciting stuff indeed. We'll see what happens if players do stick their hands up for selection. I think there is a game against Oman coming up indeed as well in September. That will be the last chance that we have, and no doubt there's going to be a poor crowd at that. And John O'Neill, just before I move on to other topics, one of the key discussions on YBIG is the atmosphere, and there was really a terrific atmosphere from the faithful that went to Craven Cottage against Italy for a friendly game, nil all. It was a really terrific. Why do you think it is that we still have that problem at home? There's people on the forum I see that are saying forget about the home friendlies because we don't seem to be able to drum up any type of atmosphere. But then when you see what happened at Craven Cottage, albeit there was a good few Italians there that helped bring something to the party, atmospheres at friendlies are always something that we don't seem to be able to have. But I was a little bit surprised seeing such a good crowd and a great atmosphere there at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, well, I think a big factor on Saturday, I wasn't there myself, unfortunately, but I heard the atmosphere was very good. I think a big factor would have been the fact that it's in London and you've got a lot of people there who live in London who are Irish, who probably don't get over to many games or don't get many Ireland games a year. So that's ideal for them. They can make a day out of it, and sort of, it was unique, so it's certainly time to get behind the team. And then everyone that went over, obviously the bank holiday weekend for Ireland, so they're making the most of the weekend, so they're going to be up for it as well, as away fans generally tend to be, and because they're probably there all in the pub all day Saturday or whatever. So just,
that seems away, to be a key point, John, because and a lot of people are mentioning after a few usually when it is away matches and you're out, you know, you've been to the pub a few times, whereas at home maybe you're just coming straight from work or something like that and people aren't inclined to get behind the team or something.
Yeah, well, that's the away thing, you know, everyone's away and more for, and generally, I mean, every club, every country, every team around the world that has supporters, their away fans are always much more vocal than their than the home fans. It's just the way it is, and obviously there's a lot of people, local people there in London. But the home, the problem with the home games with the atmosphere is probably a few things. And first of all, the new stadium is sort of very comfortable. It's one of these luxury ones. It's probably similar to the Emirates in terms of comfort, and a lot of people are sitting down in the seats and don't feel like getting up or standing up. And then obviously you have the singing section, which is behind the goal and the south stand. That's good for creating atmosphere, but it very rarely goes around to the other parts of the ground or transfers. But also the attendance hasn't been great either. I don't think it's friendly. So when you're trying to create an atmosphere and there's 10, 20,000, 25,000 in a stadium that holds 51,000, it does looks a bit empty, and that can be hard as well. And a big factor has to be that the football hasn't been good. Since we moved to the new stadium, certainly under Trapattoni, there's been nothing really to get the crowd on their feet outside of the singing section, who always make noise regardless. But under O'Neill as well, and Keane, the home games haven't been great in terms of football, getting teams on the back foot. I know that it's only friendly so far, but we haven't seen that at home really. I mean, the best atmosphere you probably have to say so far in the new stadium was against Russia in the last 15-20 minutes, when we staged a bit of a mini comeback and we were 3-0 down, got it back to 3-2 and nearly almost got a draw out of it, which we wouldn't deserve. But that was the only game really that you can remember that the whole crowd were on their feet and there was a real atmosphere going. That's a problem with the Irish teams over the last year. We seem to wait until we're losing to start playing at home. But I think if you saw a good style of football, and it's going to take a big team, like a big performance against a big team, the likes of Germany, even against Scotland, because I think Scotland home game, you get a big crowd. Say a lot of Scots will come over, so it's going to be a big game. I think it should be a good atmosphere as well. But we need the team to lift the player or to lift the fans. And sometimes there's only a certain amount of fans you can do to create an atmosphere. I mean, I'm usually in the singing section myself, but from sitting down in the other part of the stand and watching some of the top of football, you see, I wouldn't be too inclined to get up off my seat and get involved. So the team has to help as well. I think the old Lansdowne kind of, well, you had the terraces, everyone was standing up. But we generally, we put it up to teams a lot more. We went for it. Teams knew that when they were coming to Lansdowne, oh, they're going to be in a game no matter who they were. The crowd knew that as well and responded, and the players responded to the crowd. And it became a bit of a fortress, but it's been anything but a fortress since
yeah, moved. A little bit too comfortable. And I want to bring James Carew actually in on this, because James, you were living in London for quite some time there and you went to all the Ireland matches that tended to be, there was quite a few actually in London, the likes of the Wembley games and a few games in Craven Cottage and that. But when you look back and perhaps go to the home games, and as John was saying, the Aviva Stadium, it's like a real comfortable stadium. It's almost like it's very a huge contrast from the old Lansdowne Road, but almost so comfortable for the away team. They don't feel any sort of push against them at it. They're like, you're so welcome here, you can control the game. And as we've seen over the last few years, good to average teams have come and controlled the games from start to finish.
Yeah, that's it, Dave. It's not so much that the Aviva is comfortable and people are half asleep in their comfy seats. It's more the style of play we've had for the last couple of years. Like, you to talk about the old Lansdowne, it only held 36,000 with the old bucket seats in, Dave. So, you know, the Irish sellout games that sold out in the past, 36,000. Okay, the attendances are down at the moment in the Aviva, but there was 25,000 the other day. But, you know, like, once you're going above 36,000, it doesn't seem that the crowd is there. The football crowd is there, Dave. They went to Croke Park because of the novelty factor, and we had teams like Brazil going to Croke Park. But since moving to the Aviva, the 50,000, there hasn't been 50,000 at Irish soccer games since they packed into Dalymount Park and they were standing on the roofs, Dave. So, you know, you can talk about the soccer community, if you like, and the waning influence of the crowd, but of the team. But the main reason is that the football has been awful, Dave. You're not making chances. The crowd is nothing to cheer about. If you're thumping a ball long from defence, 60 yards, Richard Dunn trying to thump a ball up to Shane Long, what's to get excited about?
Yeah, but I think, sorry, James, at Croke Park as well, I mean, there was 70,000 people there that went to a lockdown, and that was during the Steve Staunton era. So,
yeah, but,
you know, there's an element to that as well.
It was a novelty. Like, you can talk about the atmosphere, 70,000 went. Okay. In my time growing up, Dave, it was difficult to get tickets to Irish matches. Now you can get them on Ticketmaster. That wasn't the case in my day. You went through your club. They're trying, like, they can't give tickets away at the moment. And that's, we can go to the argument about event junkies if you want, but until the team is successful, the crowds won't come back. So, and you talked about the atmosphere the other night. Ireland were hitting the crossbar two or three times, creating chances. That's what gets the crowd on their feet. That's what gets the crowd behind them. A lot of the comment in the match, the post-match analysis, has been about Shane Long again and possibly not being able to finish chances. I'd rather Ireland were missing chances than not creating them. Chances is what football's all about. Goal chances, goals. That's what gets the crowd behind them. That's what'll bring the Lansdowne roar back if we're taking the game, as John said, two teams, putting them on the back foot, which, let's be honest, we weren't doing that. We did that once under Trapattoni, and that was in Paris.
Yeah, okay, that's a fair point. Pete Kelly, I want to bring you in on this, but I want to put this to you, going on what the lads said, because this has developed into quite an interesting conversation. We were contrasting the old Lansdowne to the new Aviva Stadium, and then that time where the Irish football team was actually playing in Croke Park. Now, James was talking about his experiences of, you know, going up and going to a local club trying to get tickets and that, and obviously yourself having been involved in soccer in Galway for so many years, I remember trying to get on the block booking list for the old Lansdowne Road, and we were put on a waiting list. We only used to get to friendlies, but if you got offered a ticket to a friendly, you'd have to take it or you'd move further down, you know, on this waiting list. And then when we didn't get qualifiers. We sometimes got a qualifier when it was returns from an away, you know, an away support if they didn't sell out their allocation. I remember the Swiss match under Mick McCarthy. Actually, Mick McCarthy's last game where we lost 2-1, I think it was, to Switzerland. I was there through, it was the block booker scheme, but it was because the Swiss fans didn't sell out their allocation. Then we went to Croke Park and we got tickets. And then when the FAI were ringing me trying to sell the 10-year tickets for 10 grand in their Vantage Club, I made the point to the guy. I said, will I still get my tickets? Because I am a block booker. Now we got them in Croke Park. And he said, oh no, we'll go back onto the list. We said, you won't be guaranteed them now for the Aviva Stadium. You'll have to go back onto the waiting list. So having gotten them, it went back on. But my God, how things have changed, Pete.
Well, they have. You know, you mentioned the Vantage Club there. And I think that has been one of the great disasters that the FAI have been associated with. And, you know, they had a roadshow, went around the country. They're trying to sell those. And some of the people they had tried to sell them, I'd say, we're never at a game in their lives. You know, they were so-called marketing people, but they really hadn't a clue. So that was almost doomed for disaster from the start. I think I get it what the lads were saying. You know, when we sold out in the old Lansdowne, there was only 36,000 people there because they had to close behind the goals where they couldn't put in the seats. You know, where it was used to be 45,000 for the rugby games. But, and I think the new Aviva is great, and I think the fans will come back. I don't think it's all down to the football. I think the strong economic reasons why guys can't afford to go to the games, it's expensive. You know, it's all very, you know, it's well and good if you live in Dublin, you just can kind of get a bus and get out there, and that's fine. And there should be enough of a population in Dublin to sustain if none of us came up from the country to the games. But if you're coming from Galway or Cork or Limerick and go to an international game, it's going to cost you quite a lot of money. And a lot of people just don't have it. Excuse me. So I think that's probably not as big a factor maybe as the football or the quality of it, but it's a serious consideration. It was a bit of a gimmicky thing when we were in Croke Park. I thought, you know, it's a wonderful stadium for Gaelic football and hurling, but you are so far away from the pitch, you know, for a soccer match in Croke Park. And if you had a seat in the corner of the stadium,
in the corner, yeah, the first match under Trapattoni, No, the first match under Trapattoni. The first match was against Wales, but the first game actually that Trapattoni took charge against Serbia, I think it was, we were in section 333 of the lower Cusack, and we actually had to move because it was right in the corner lower down, and you know, it was looking diagonally and you couldn't make out anything. We had to move more centrally, and it was something like, I think it was, they were more expensive because they were lower down or something crazy.
Yeah, and you were about 150 yards from the pitch there as well, at least, you know.
Exactly.
And just when you mentioned Croke Park, and there's maybe one memory that might revive for everybody, when the day that Ireland played Wales in that very first game, my one vivid memory from that game was Damien Duff roasted the backside off Gareth Bale. You know, absolutely destroyed him. And I know Bale was only a raw young lad. You could see the talent, but it just goes to show you, you know, what can happen. Duff was absolutely brilliant. And maybe some of the lessons that Bale learned that day have stood him in good stead.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think it did him any harm, Pete.
No.
That's for sure. Just before we let rock and roll, lads, Joe, just to finally come to you. I know the under-19s were beaten there in a match to Serbia, I think it was. Disappointing. I was reading a couple of fans who had posted it on YBIG. They were doing a little report on the match, and you know, people were saying completely outclassed and that kind of thing, but it was the second phase of the elite qualifying stages. It's hard to know how we're ranking at underage. There's some very good results and some bad results. Is there a lack of consistency there? What's going on? Do you know?
I think that's definitely a problem. I mean, I was at the first game in the three-game series against Iceland, and you know, this is a very good Iceland team. They knocked France out of the first round of qualifying before getting moving on into the elite stage. You know, and they played Turkey, who've traditionally been very strong at underage level, and Serbia, who are the current under-19 champions. So, you know, people can say maybe it's inconsistency. I know, as well as that, they were up against three very, very good sides. One thing that I did that I was a little disappointed by was not the players that were there, but the players that missed out. There was Dan Cleary from Liverpool. There was Jack Byrne from Manchester City, and well, Jack Grealish from Aston Villa is still eligible for the under-19s, but I think he's been fast tracked.
He was in down under-21s, but he's actually on tour in Hong Kong, and he scored an absolutely magnificent goal for the Aston Villa team there in Hong Kong. It really is. If you can find it on Twitter, you can search my own Twitter. I tweeted it out. It's a remarkable goal, a typical Jack Grealish style goal. So things are going good on that front. But as you said, I see those reports as well, Joe. A lot of players missing. But Sam Byrne, who was released from United, I think he scored a cracking free kick. He'll be, hopefully it won't be long before he picks up a club.
Yeah, he started up front as a lone striker against Iceland. And I have to say, in the first half, I wasn't too impressed with him. I thought his work rate was lacking. But the first goal went in. It was a header from a deep cross on the left. It did seem to wake him up a little. Maybe just gave him a little bit of confidence back. You know, suddenly, you know, he was full of movement. He was full of tricks. You know, there was one passage of play in particular where he, you know, there was a long pass out for a long punt even out from defence, and he just killed the ball dead at one touch, and you know, was straight away into attacking. You know, bearing down on the Icelandic goal, and you know, his second goal then a header from a corner. You know, I think that the talent of the lad is there. He didn't really have the best time out on loan at Carlisle. He did score one goal, and it was an absolute cracker of a goal as well. There was talk that Celtic were monitoring him at the games. That there was some championship clubs had scouts watching him. I did get the impression, you know, you do hear about these lads who develop a little bit earlier than everyone else, and you know, that they're a little bit taller, they're a little bit stronger, and then when they move up into the next, you know, as other players catch up with them, that these strengths are starting to become less important, and they might have done a little bit of that in his stagnation recently. He said that, you know, he doesn't regret going to Manchester United one bit, and you know, I mean, who would? You know, he's learned a lot there. They have a great underage setup. You know, there's definitely some prospects for him to get another club across the water over the summer, and I hope he does. You know, just the other players that impressed me. I mentioned Bobby Mosley of Birmingham City earlier on at left full, very comfortable, very strong player, very technically adept. There was Noe Baba at Fulham. He was playing at right full. I think he's still quite young. He's only 17, but is very much part of the youth setup at Fulham. You know, he was involved in the recent FA Youth Cup final, which they lost over the two legs to Chelsea. There was Liverpool's Alex O'Hanlon, who was playing in it's kind of similar to the role that Wes Hoolan was playing behind Sam Byrne, and you know, he seemed to be everywhere against Iceland, and you know, a very, very good control of the ball with his feet, and he seems to have this rare gift to be able to find space and time on the ball, no matter how many players were around him, and you know, and the ability to pick out a pass and a through ball almost every time he was in possession. So I think he might be one to watch in the future. I think we're a little disappointed that the lads didn't get through, and you know, it's rare that we do host a qualifying series here in Ireland. I think this, you know, these players now will go into the under 21 setup. I think Noe Baba might still be under 19 next year. So you know, he might benefit from just another year at that level, just to develop until he's ready for under 21s.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see how they develop, and hopefully it goes well. Some very good players on show there for the under-19s, and we'll see how they progress over the next few years. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. We've talked the show to death at this stage. Huge thanks to all my guests on the Why Big Football Show. We're going to do it all again next week. From myself, Dave O'Grady, enjoy your football. We're getting ready for the World Cup, and I hope to chat to you soon. Take care.